The following oral history interview was held on April 14, 1996, with Tom Streb, a cement plant foreman. The interview was conducted over the phone. The interviewer is Ginger Streb, a student of Kodiak College. Well, hello, Tom. I'd like to thank you for doing this interview with me. The first question I'd like to ask is how long you've lived in Alaska.
Since 1959.
Well, why was it that you came to Alaska in the first place?
I came with my aunt and uncle. I lived with them at the time.
And why were they coming to Alaska?
He was coming up here to become a member of the FAA.
When you first came here, where was it that you stayed?
Well, we stayed in Anchorage. We got to Anchorage and we stayed here for 2 weeks in a motel. And then we flew to Nome for 2 years.
To Nome? What was it like living in Nome?
Well, it was a lot different than anything I'd ever had experienced in my life. Nome was a very, very small town. It was probably 75% Native and 25% white. We lived outside of Nome in government housing, and we got to Nome in the middle of winter, and it was dark, stayed dark the whole time. And then all of a sudden, it becomes summer, and then it stayed light. And probably one of the worst beatings I ever got in my life was when my aunt told us to come home before it got dark, and it never got dark. We didn't show up till the next morning. She was kind of angry about that.
Were there many hardships you had to endure besides the light change?
Well, not as a child, as the adults. They had to order their food a month in advance, so I imagine it must have been kind of tough trying to figure out, you know, meals for 30 days because all food came in on a charter aircraft once a month. As a child, it was one of the greatest places in the world to be.
Am I guessing you had flushing toilets?
Yes, in the government housing, we had flushing toilets, but the town of Nome and even the school that I went to, they had what was called honey buckets, and honey buckets were just a bucket that was dumped every day. And the village itself didn't have any water. The water had to be all hand-carried, but in the government housing, we had all the modern amenities.
What were the schools like? Was it a one room, or did they have different grades? Or?
No, we had different grades. There was 12, actually it was 12 rooms. Each room was a different grade. There was a cafeteria. There was a nice big gym, and the gym was probably one of the vocal points of the community entertainment, because everybody in school belonged to the basketball team or something like that. We went, school was split into two shifts, morning shift and afternoon shift. I went to the afternoon shift. I went to school, I believe it was at 1 o'clock, and got off at 4:30.
Sounds like there was quite a lot of kids. What would you guess the population was at the time?
The population of Nome in 1959 was probably about 800.
Wow, a lot of that must have been kids.
Most of them, yeah.
So what was it that you guys did for entertainment back then?
Well, like I said, we all belonged to a basketball team or something. I belonged to a team called the Nome Nuggets, and we took second place that year.
In the whole state of Alaska?
No, just in the city of Nome. But that was quite an accomplishment for a bunch of people that didn't know what a basketball was.
You must have had to learn real quick.
Sure.
Do you remember much prejudice towards you or the natives?
As a child, no. There was no prejudice among the children. We played, kids were kids. After I left Nome and grew older, then I had heard that there was, you know, the prejudice between the adults. But as children, I don't remember any prejudice between us and the native population whatsoever.
You never witnessed any prejudice between the adults when you were young?
Not to my knowledge. I never seen it. Again, I didn't look at life as an adult. I looked at life as where my next farm was going to be.
Were there any gold miners left by that time in the city of Nome?
There wasn't a lot, but there were still the, you know, the gold claims, and there was the old miners that were out, and they'd come in once a year and bring their gold in and have it assayed. And, we used to go down to the beaches. One of our like field trips was go down to the beaches, and the beaches of Nome is black beaches, and we'd go down there and dig around and we'd find gold, and that was one of our field trips.
What were some of the other kind of field trips you would do in school?
Well, whenever the whaling captains would go out and beach a whale, the school would let out, and we'd go down there, and of course, as a white person, we weren't involved, but we'd watch the natives butcher the whales.
The native children were involved with it?
Definitely. They all had their job to do.
Do you remember the native children living a lot differently than you did? Like friends that you know, didn't have the clothing that you wore or did different things?
Back then, they wore more or less the native traditional clothing where we wore the store-bought. But actually, we were kind of jealous that they had a lot better looking coats and stuff than we had. They had the furs and the mukluks. We just had old Rogan boots.
I'd like to stop and go back for a minute and find out how was it that you came to Alaska?
Well, like I said, we came to Alaska because my uncle was employed with the FAA and his duty assignment was going to be Nome, Alaska. We left from where we went to school in Oklahoma City. And we left Oklahoma City. We were driving a 1956 Ford two-door coupe. There was five children and two adults in that car.
Must have been pretty crowded. Did it cause any problems?
It was very, very crowded. Three children sat in the back seat, and one child sat in the floor, and one sat up front with the two adults.
Have you driven the Alcan since then?
Many, many times.
And what changes have there been since you did it for the first time?
Oh, tremendous. When I first came up the Alcan, it was a little bitty two-lane dirt road. Of course, at the time, we came up in November, so it was all snow and ice. It was a little bitty, just a trail through the wilderness. And there wasn't any, there was no stores. And gas stations were very, very far and few between. You never passed the gas station without getting gas because you didn't know how far the next one was going to be.
Did you have to carry gas in cans so you wouldn't be afraid of running out?
Yeah, well, we were pulling a homemade little trailer that we carried, you know, a few gas cans on just in case. It was very cold that winter. I think we came up in November, and I remember 40 below, 50 below zero temperatures. When we left Oklahoma, of course, we knew we were coming to Alaska, so we bought some winter coats. Well, in Oklahoma, winter coats are probably equal to about spring coats in Alaska. And one time my uncle was tired of driving. There was no hotel or motel to stop at, so we just pulled beside the road, and we took a few hour nap, and even with the car idling, the radiator froze up. And I remember having to take a water jug and up the road from a ways to the farmhouse. And I had to walk down the farmhouse to get some water for the radiator. By the time I got back, it was so cold my nose was bleeding.
Were you by yourself?
Yes, it was only about maybe a quarter of a mile up there. Actually, it was backwards. We had to go, you know, we passed the farmhouse, you know, like, or little cabin, whatever it was. And I had to walk back there with a jug of water to, you know, jug to get some water.
How old were you at the time?
Nine.
So what were you expecting Alaska to be like at the age of nine?
The greatest wilderness in the world.
And did it disappoint you?
Oh, it sure did. would be probably the most magnificent thing I've ever seen in my life. The mountains reached the sky. Probably nobody will ever drive the Elk Cannon like I've seen it. It was a pure, untouched wilderness. It was gorgeous.
Did you see many animals on the trip?
Many, many. We've seen wolverines and wolves and fox and moose and caribou, bears. Back then, there wasn't enough travel to drive the animals off the road corridor. So I mean, we stopped many times with a bear sitting in the middle of the road, and he wasn't about to move, and we weren't about to try to make him.
How was it that you ended up going by? Did you just have to wait till he got off the road?
We just waited till he decided it was time for him to move on, and then he'd walk away, and we'd drive past.
So were you the only one out of the entourage that thought it was fun, or did everybody enjoy the trip?
Well, all the children enjoyed the excitement of the, you know, the wilderness trip and the adventure. I think my uncle was probably concerned and worried about being out in the middle of nowhere with five children. But as a child, it was one of the greatest experiences of my life.
What was it that you had to eat on the way up?
Well, we'd stop at some of the, you know, if you wanted to call them lodges, and there wasn't no menu. You'd go into a lodge, and they'd maybe have moose stew or whatever they had available. If there was no menus, you just ate whatever they had cooked for the day. And the breakfast sometimes, we'd just, you know, they'd have pancakes. There was no eggs, because eggs were a premium. Couldn't hardly get an egg on the highway then. But we'd have pancakes and coffee. If we had milk, it was always powdered because there was nothing fresh along the road.
Had you been used to eating wild game, or was it something that you had to get used to?
Something we got used to. I had never eaten moose before. I never had no idea what it was like. I first tasted it. It was kind of a little strange, but I liked it. We ate bears. They had bear stew. One place had bear. I remember it was, we had bear stew. Another place had moose steak. For a child, it was very challenging.
You had stated before that you've traveled the Alcan many times since. Did you ever consider leaving Alaska?
Not permanently, no. Every time I've always left, I always knew I'd come back. This is a place that I love, and I imagine someday when I retire or something that maybe I'll go out for the winters and be what they call a snowbird, but no, I'll be back.
After the 2 years you spent in Nome, where was it that you went?
Well, we left Nome, we came back, and we lived in just northeast of Anchorage in a place called Eagle River. And I lived there until I basically went in the Army. Way back then, there was just a little tiny little place. There was one little shopping mall and a little ice cream stand. And I was the first grade that ever went to Eagle River Elementary. It was pretty primitive back then. We had no running water. We had running water, if you wanted to count running to get it. It was very nice. It was 14 miles into Anchorage, which was quite a long ways to go back then, because, you know, the transportation that we had. My uncle was still working for the FAA. And it was a real good... After leaving Nome, it was totally different, because Nome didn't have any trees. It's, you know, barren country, and then come back and live in Eagle River, and it was out of wood. That's the first place that I ever went moose hunting. In fact, the place I shot a moose is a shopping center built today.
When you say that you went to the war, was that Vietnam?
Yes, I went to Vietnam, and I was one of the few young men that went to Vietnam from Eagle River area, and contrary to the rest of the country, you know, Alaska was very patriotic, and I was held on a pedestal because I did go, and when I did return from Vietnam, I was kind of treated very, very well. A lot of my friends that went back to Los Angeles and other places like that, they were treated kind of as, it was wrong. When I came home, I was treated extremely well and thanked that I did my duty for my country.
So were you in Alaska during the 64 earthquake?
Absolutely. It was quite something. When it first hit, we didn't know. We thought it was kind of funny for a second or two, and then it got a little stronger and stronger, and dishes and things started falling off the walls. And of course, Eagle River didn't get hit like Anchorage did, but right after that, I was no longer living with my aunt and uncle. I was living with a friend, and she was a ham radio operator at the time. And she became governor, and the governor at the time was Egan. And she was Governor Egan's personal mobile ham. So, because there was no communications with the outside world except for the ham radio. It was quite thrilling. It was quite scary, and, you know, every day after we kept expecting another one to be even worse, but it never did stop, so. As a child, you know, I didn't realize the damage and the destruction that it had caused. It was just something that I remember as very awesome, and to this very day, I'm kind of a little scared of earthquakes.
Did it cause destruction as in loss of running water or electricity or anything of that kind?
Yes, we had no electricity for about a week or so, and like I said, we had no water anyway. We had to carry our own water. But we had loss of, there was no supplies. The only food that was available, because the highway was completely destroyed between Anchorage and Eagle River, the only food that was available was what was in the little grocery store at the time, which was called Piggly Wiggly. And within a matter of hours, there was nothing left in the store. Everybody went down and grabbed it and get a hold of. But it wasn't as bad as what some people think it was. And we had plenty to eat. We were warm. We had no problem.
What was it that you did after you came back from Vietnam?
Well, I guess for a couple months or so, I just kind of bummed around and didn't really have no meaning or nothing to my life. I just kind of trying to get my head straightened out after Vietnam. And then I was offered a job at the borough fire department to be a fireman. And I guess every boy's dream is to be a fireman. So I had an opportunity, and I joined the fire department as a fireman.
Do any calls that you got while you were with the firemen stand out in your mind?
Yes, one in particular. I was working out of the Eagle River Fire Station, and of course we had an ambulance there, and I was a medic, a trained emergency medical technician, and there was a call that came in that a lady had collided with a moose. And that particular night that call came in, every fire station was giving a class on first aid to any civilian that wanted to, you know, come to it. And of course, all the radio transmissions are monitored in every station, and at that time, the borough had 7 fire stations. So we dispatched the ambulance, and I was driving the ambulance, and my partner was in the back, and we arrived in the scene, and it was a pretty bad accident. This lady, she made hamburger with this moose, and she wasn't really badly hurt, but she definitely needed to go to the hospital. So we put her in the back of the ambulance, and I'm driving down the road, and next thing I know, I hit a moose. And so I called the dispatch, told her, you know, dispatch is called Fire Control, and Fire Control, this is Rescue 11, and please be advised, I just collided with a moose. but I'm continuing to the hospital with the patient, and to please have the fire chief meet me at the hospital so I can fill out these papers because I had an accident. So we get to the hospital, and this lady, she's kind of a little slightly hysteric because, you know, she just hit a moose, and then all of a sudden the ambulance she's riding in hit a damn moose. And I fill out the paperwork, and then on the way back, I have to stop and wait for the Alaska State Troopers to get there to fill out an accident report at the scene. And right there is, like, we pulled up, and there was a military police car sitting there. And this is a big white ambulance with big red crosses on the side. And we pull up there, and the MP comes walking over, and he says, are you the Salvation Army or the Red Cross going to pick up the dead moose? And with his dummies, it hit it. And all of a sudden, so he kind of shook his head and walked back to his car, and then the state trooper pulled up behind me, and he walked up and says, just what in the world is an ambulance doing on a dead moose? So we had to explain to him that we're the ones that hit the moose and what happened and all this stuff. And we filled out the report, and then we went back to the station, and of course, again, all the radio transmissions that had taken place, everybody in the city had heard. The next morning, when we woke up, somebody had taken, you know, the little school stickers they give for being good boys and bad, good boys and girls. There was a little moose, because there was a big dent in the ambulance. And somebody put one of these little moose stickers right on the big dent. And consequently, there's a magazine, what do they call that magazine? The Alaska Magazine? We were involved in that. They got a hold of the story and mentioned the lady's name that after hitting a moose while being transported to the hospital and gave my name and my partner's name, we did drive the moose and how this lady probably would not be interested in eating any moose for another month or two.
So you got to be famous for a while.
I think the word is infamous.
So, Tom, what changes have you seen in Alaska since you first came here?
Well, when I first came here, Alaska was quite wilderness and very backwards. I've seen a tremendous change in modernization and technologies. I mean, people lived up here when I was young, people lived in cabins without running water and no public, very, very little public service. I've seen a tremendous change in the growth of the state and the size of the population. I'm not exactly sure that I'm happy with, I mean, because I've always dreamed it to be still the last frontier, back when everybody was pioneering spirit. I see Alaska now as basically, especially the Anchorage area, is just another metropolis. We do have a lot less problems than you hear about Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago. But we're getting there, but I see that with the Alaskan spirit, and yet we can do attitude, I think we're going to solve our problems a lot quicker than some of the other cities are doing. When I was young, we never locked doors. We left keys in the car. If somebody needed to use the car, all of a sudden you'd look out the window and the car would be gone, but an half an hour later it'd be back and the gas tank would be filled up. If you weren't home and all of a sudden you came home and the lights were on, you knew that somebody was in the house. There was no problem. It wasn't a burglar. It was a neighbor needing something. And those days have kind of changed. We got caught up in the modern 20th century, like everybody else has. And I think our change from being a very rural state to a metropolitan state has been very traumatic. People not quite used to it, but I think we're learning.
Have you seen a good deal of people's attitudes changing?
Once somebody's been in the States for a few years and they kind of catch the Alaskan spirit, I think your attitude changes. I mean, let's face it, all white Alaskans are basically outsiders. But I think once you've been up there for a certain amount of time, your attitude changes and you become a lot friendly. I think Alaskans are probably some of the friendliest people in the world. In fact, you ask any tourist, and they'll tell you that. They'll say that, you know, that we're the most friendliest, helpful people in the world, unless you meet us on the highway, and then they kind of don't like it that much.
So, Tom, what are you doing now?
Well, now I am the foreman of the only cement plant in the state of Alaska. I've been there for 15 years. I worked my way up from just the general laborer up to the foreman. I've been there 15 years. I have 4 more years before I can retire. I enjoy my job. I'm looking forward to retirement because there's a lot of Alaska that I really haven't seen. I think there's probably some tourists that have seen more of Alaska than I have. And when I retire, I plan on doing a lot more hunting and fishing and going all over the state and seeing things. Right now, I'm married to an Alaskan native that comes from the village of Sleepnute, which is on the Kuskokwim, on the confines of the Kuskokwim, the Ulina River, which is one of the greatest fishing spots in the world. And I hope to go up there and spend some time and learn a lot more about Native culture than I know now.
Is there any special place in Alaska that you plan on retiring?
Yes, I'm thinking about when I retire. I have some property up in the Talkeetna area, and I've owned it for 20 years. In fact, this is the anniversary of the 20th year that I've owned the property. I've been building on this cabin for 20 years, and I kind of like to go up there maybe and retire for a few years and live off the land, plant a big garden, go hunt moose and catch salmon, live off the land, kind of maybe regress back to my childhood and live up there like when I was a child and daydream about days gone by.
So what do you think Alaska has in store for in its future, economically and politically?
Well, I'm not a see the future, but I see Alaska as a very growing state that has tremendous opportunities for our young people. I see Alaska as trying to give opportunities for its older people, its retirees. Back when I was younger, most people, when they got a little older, they left the state. I see Alaska as trying to keep their older people here. I'm planning on staying here myself. Politically, I think our government officials are doing the best that they can. I don't always agree with what they say, but I think Alaska's got a tremendous future. I see there's great opportunities for our young people to stay in the state. I see we're finally getting an educational process for our kids to obtain a higher education without having to go outside. I see where they can turn around and put that education to use in Alaska. And I see Alaska as a rising star.
Why, thank you, Tom. I appreciate your cooperation with this project and wish you many more happy years of your future in Alaska.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.